Here's a word you might have heard recently. Hygge. Say it with me, Knut Berger. How am I doing?
Pretty good, I think. Yeah. Hygge.
Hygge. Oh, Idioma Luo is still with us, too. Hygge. You want to try that?
No.
Okay, so what is hygge?
Hygge is being consciously cozy, but it has also been described as the art of creating a nice atmosphere. It's been called the pursuit of everyday happiness. It's also been called socializing for introverts. But it's about being together with the people you love. It's about relaxation. It's about indulgence. It's about good food. It's about gratitude. It's about equality. All those things mixed together is hygge.
Well, hygge sounds nice. That's Mike Viking from the Happiness Research Institute talking to Vice News. Hygge, socializing for introverts. That sounds like something we might be into here in Seattle. And in fact, we are or have been named America's most hygge city, according to some online thing. It's called Sperling's Best Places. We got a hygge score of 135.3, Knut, and it surprises me that you would, in your most recent column, question Seattle's title as the most hygge city, because you seem like a guy who appreciates the hygge.
Hey, I appreciate being cozy.
Oh.
I grew up cozy. I am cozy. I'm a privileged person. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this list is, first of all, picking cities with hygge, the criteria that was used was pretty interesting. Like Seattle, 58% of the homes in Seattle have a fireplace. This is considered very hygge. People read a lot here. People, it's cold and wet or snowy out. These are part of the defining aspects of a hygge town.
These are qualities we celebrate about ourselves, aren't they? We have fire. We love our reading when it's cold by the fireplace. You just ticked off some happy hygge. What's your issue?
Well, when you kind of look at this list, it's first of all, they're not looking for what creates a sense of well-being in American cities across a broad spectrum of cities. So when you select for dark and rain and snow, you're talking about northern tier cities. So the top five hygge cities are all white majority cities. They're Seattle, Portland, Minneapolis, Denver, Salt Lake. These are kinds.
And why cities, not New York cities, and Chicago? And we've got lots of cold places.
Well, and you wonder why they even bother to rank places like Florida or Los Angeles or Tucson. It's like your whole definition leaves them out. But nevertheless, they were ranked on this chart as very unhygge. Which sort of implies that they're, uncivil or comforts are hard to come by. And then when you look at the definitions of what makes a place cozy, first of all, fireplaces are something that pretty much you have to be a single family homeowner.
Right.
In Seattle, it used to be that people of pretty much all income levels could buy a single family home. I mean, it was a relatively egalitarian city that way. Now a bungalow's $1 million. Hmm. So if you have access to a fireplace, you're land rich anyway.
Idioma, how did you react to the news that Seattle is very cozy hygge?
I mean, this to me feels like kind of like some weird like Gwyneth Paltrow goop stuff. Like, oh, you got to get you a fireplace. Oh, it's only, $1 million to get yourself a home with a fireplace in Seattle. How could you? What savages living without these things? It's like, oh, yeah, that would be nice. It's like running into these women telling me about how their $200 yoga pants are a lifesaver. No, they're actually not a lifesaver.
And your life is probably not at stake to begin with.
Exactly. And like we're really talking about the icing on the cake once insurmountable amounts of privilege have hit your way. even just the thought of getting to choose where you live and what region you live in, and for the cold and the rain to not be the thing that causes you to freeze to death.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, we're not talking about comfort. Like, that's the exact opposite of comfort for people who are not privileged in society.
Well, if you're going to brag about how cozy you are in your house or something like that, I've done that. That's what Facebook is for, right? I put here's my new Pendleton blanket.
Uh-huh.
As an individual thing, I don't have a problem with it. It's this idea that this is some way to evaluate cities, that there's some kind of universal ethic that's being applied. Back to fireplaces and privilege. Okay, I mean, I grew up, my dad wanted a fire every night of the week. We bought cordwood, filled the garage. He made me chop it.
Uh-huh. You were kindling, man?
I was a kindling splitter for many years to please, in the 2 months a year when there wasn't rain.
Uh-huh.
I got time
you
off
got a break.
The lawn, yeah. But just take firewood, for example. Recently, my son was looking to buy some firewood or see if he could get some firewood delivered, right? Well, if you want a high BTU, something that's energy efficient relatively for firewood, like a maple is a good example, is $650 for a cord of maple. I mean, it's like, it used to be like 60, 70, 80 bucks. And even at inflated prices, it shouldn't be more than a couple hundred dollars. So even putting the wood in your fireplace, if you don't care about the environmental damage that mm-hmm. does, it's also kind of a rich person's thing.
I think it's also funny that we forget like what fireplaces actually were to people back in the day. Because when I was a kid and we were going from low-income complex to low-income complex and constantly being forced to move as rents rise, my mom would always try and find a top floor apartment because that was the one most likely to have a fireplace. And we had the fireplace not because we wanted creature comforts, but because when your electricity is cut off multiple times a year, it's the thing that stops you from freezing to death. And we forget that when electric heat came along, people were like, no more smoky fireplaces. This is a miracle. And for many of us, and that people actually still die every year from trying to light fires in their homes to keep warm when they don't have heat and reliable sources of electricity. We forget that we are treating what is a necessity of survival for a lot of people as this great luxury. And, when I was a kid, it was embarrassing that a fireplace was our only source of heat. Mm-hmm. But that's what we needed to survive and looking at it. And so it's kind of this weird thing of like people who shop at thrift stores and they're like, it's the new fashion. I'm like, no, those are the clothes I was made fun of every day for as a kid.
Yeah. So are you telling listeners who feel it's January and they love their cozy fires? Are you telling them not to have fires or just to feel bad about them while they're having them? What's the takeaway from the Hygge Award?
Well, I think the idea that you would rate cities based on whether you can have a fire or not and that kind of thing, that's what I think is absurd. I love a fire.
So we're going to boycott the award ceremony. We are not going.
Well, you know how Seattle is when there's a list and we're number one on it. It doesn't matter what it is.
I avoid those lists every time, except then I saw you writing about Hygge, and I said, you got me. We're going to talk about a list. Damn it.
Yeah. Snagged.
Snagged.
I think it's important to look at these things, not necessarily as like a sense of shame, but as an opportunity to find out where you can do better. We're sitting here celebrating this vast amount of comfort, and we all really do know that there is a large percentage of our local population that does not have access to these quote-unquote comforts. And that's where we look and say, hey, I am sitting cozy in my fireplace thinking of this wet rain as a luxury. Who isn't? What can I do with some of this luxury that allows me to be able to afford all of this to help fix that? What can I do with my voting decisions to help fix this? What can I do so that instead of it being a luxury, it's a standard? How can we do to make sure that, my race and my class doesn't determine my ability to stay warm and comfortable through long, gray, wet Seattle winters?
Please tell me that you also get to be in a good mood during all that commitment to doing better in the world.
Yes, you can be warm.
It's not always exhausting and depressing.
Being warm helps you do these things better. It's really hard to focus on making the world better when you're shivering all the time. So know that you can enjoy it, invite a friend over, and then think, hey, I am working my butt off to help make sure that other people get to feel safe and warm. And you know what? Let that warm you. That will warm you in a better way.
So when this article or this the list was announced in the newspaper, someone in our office said, well, does this explain the Seattle freeze? And like the guy said at the very beginning.
Oh, because we're all huddling in,
It's like coziness for introverts or social engineering for introverts.
Yes.
Kind of thing. And which is also another aspect of that because, you know, people move to Seattle and they think, you know, we're all, you know, kind of friendly on the outside, but frosty on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Won't invite people over and that kind of thing. And the Hygge thing kind of, you know, explains that. I mean, that there is this kind of, you know, drive to internalize, to surround yourself with a very small, close-knit, you know, family group and, you know, play Parcheesi in the depths of winter and that kind of thing, and raising that to some sort of civic virtue. But a lot of people move to Seattle and don't find that that's a virtue at all. I admit I'm a Seattle freezer myself.
Mm-hmm.
Just intuitively, it's just grew up that way. My parents were that way.
Yeah. So are we hoping to drop down this list as we get more apartments and we have so smaller environmental footprints, and we are having fewer bad for the environment fires, and we're getting out because we don't live in our giant cozy places. So we're out like New Yorkers. We're out in the world and socializing. Are we hoping we drop down this list, down, less Hygge?
I think it's important to realize that these are all kind of different shades of the same thing. I think a lot of times people are patting themselves looking at this list, right? Because it seems much more sincere and authentic to be celebrating a fireplace and a nice, you know, wet, cozy winter than flashy cars and a strong nightlife. But it's basically the same money that buys both. And we can't act as if this is a moral victory that we're celebrating spending all of our money on our overpriced homes versus other people spending all of their money going out to clubs on a Saturday night, you know, and really look at the fact that we're still really talking about a lot of income inequality.
Or hoarding.
Well, yeah. And of course, one thing I learned from this list is that you basically have to be a rich person in order to live like a Danish peasant. It's like we're mimicking this lifestyle, but you have to make Amazon money.
We're talking about different Instagram accounts, basically. We're talking about the flashy Miami Instagram accounts and the equally pricey shabby chic Instagram accounts, you know? And
yes.
That's basically all it is.
Knut Berger writes for Crosscut, and his latest column asks, could Seattle get any whiter than its rating as top Hygge city? And Ijeoma Aluo talking with us as well about coziness. Coziness and real coziness. We are the real warmth that's out there waiting for you. We're tweeting out a link right now to Knut's column. Thanks to you both.
Thank you, Bill.